Well, debates were Saturday. You know, we were discussing the viewers. We were discussing the ratings. We were discussing exactly what it means as far as Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton and getting out the vote and the excitement and the fact that when you have 13 million, almost 14 million people, okay? When you have almost 14 million people, and those people are tuning in to watch the Republicans, and you have 4 million tuning in to watch the Democrats, there is a huge, huge disconnect. That's what I call it, a huge disconnect that exists with voting blocks and getting people out to vote and supporting either party almost not caring who that nominee is per se. Now, when you have the ratings that fluctuate when it has Trump and doesn't have Trump, it's obvious there's groups of people that are turning out specifically for Trump. But even when you take Trump away, like the Fox debates, you see that the turnout, just like the Iowa caucuses, the turnout is immensely, immensely in the favor of the Republican Party. So that's just a kind of cap on what we were talking about before we lost our trains of thought with the rescheduling of the Roger Stone interview. So let's talk about the debates. You guys had to have seen the debates, right? You had to have seen the debates. You had to have seen the debates. 14 million people saw the debates, and if you listen to this show, you are a conservative, you are a Republican. That means you watched the debates. How awesome was it? There's a lot of takeaways I have from the debates. First off, I will be honest and tell you that I think Trump not being at the Iowa debate, I think it hurt him as far as the voting there. Now, I know I've done my Rubik's Cube analysis, and the Rubik's Cube analysis holds up in the wake of the ratings. So when I told you about the different outcomes and what it all meant, and the only outcome for Trump that night would be debate, attack, be attacked, argue moderators, end the debate, spin room, people talk about it, go and vote. That's it. Not doing the debate, you had days and days and days of taking the oxygen out of the whole process. You had the debate without Trump, people talked about Trump. It was noticeably a different vibe. We don't have to go through it all again, but I think if you take Trump not being at the Iowa debates, the Ted Cruz shenanigans with the Ben Carson votes, and a ground game that could have been possibly a smidgen better. But even if you just take out the ground game, I think Trump would have pulled it out. I think that could have been the difference of the 6,000 votes. But that's neither here nor there. And why I bring that up is because the Saturday night debate was a great, great showing for Trump going in to the vote for tomorrow. It was a great showing for Chris Christie. And I told you guys, my number 2 and 3 pick, believe it or not, is Chris Christie, member, on the one condition, he would have to actually lose weight. He has to lose weight. And number 3 would be John Kasich. So it's number 1, Trump, and a close 2 and 3, Christie and Kasich. But I don't know how quick Christie can lose that weight. He might have to get liposuction. Seriously, he might have to get liposuction surgery in order for me to really jump on that bandwagon. But that debate Saturday night was huge. It was huge in so many ways. It changed the course of this primary and where we will go after tomorrow. I mean, if Trump doesn't win, that's speechless. Okay, right now he's still about 20 points up. He was strong. He was strong in that debate performance, real strong. And the number 2 man, because remember, Ted Cruz isn't really the number 2 man. And if Ted Cruz doesn't have a strong showing tomorrow, Ted Cruz becomes exactly what I and many other people have said. The Jesus vote that Iowa always gives out to whoever preaches the best, whoever faith-based organizes the best. Whoever does those things the best, Iowa rewards them. And if Ted Cruz doesn't finish second, doesn't finish third, ends at fourth or fifth, he's exactly what Rick Santorum was. He's exactly what Mike Huckabee was. Pat Robertson. The list goes on and on and on and on and on of Republicans that either finished first or second, and their whole basis of a campaign is Jesus having their back. So Ted Cruz isn't really the number 2 man. The number 2 man is Marco Rubio. That's who the establishment loves. That's who the establishment loves. When you turn on Fox News, they love him. When you turn on CNN and all of the Republican pundits, love him. They look at Marco Rubio as the Hispanic Obama. That's how they look at him. That's how they look at him. How do we, that was their premise for years. How do we get an Obama? There's two premises. How do we get a rock star, which is what they have in Trump? But all of the Obama qualities Trump doesn't have. Minority, young, inexperienced, you know, all of those things. Yes, I know Trump never served in office before, but just the life experiences, building companies and just, you know, banging heads with serious people, whether it's in business or even in different politics. You know, Obama, what experience? Community organizing? That's not experience. Setting up tables at churches to have bingo? That's not experience. Come on. It's not experience. It's not experience at all. So the Republican Party is dying to have their own Obama. And they got it with Rubio. They got it with Marco Rubio. So from Essie Cup to the Dana LaRouche to Perino, I'm telling you, the list goes on and on and on and on and on and on. With Republicans salivating, frothing. Remember that interview that Megyn Kelly did with Marco Rubio last week? She's practically sticking to the chair. So they love Marco. They love him. So that's the number two guy. And in the weeks prior, Chris Christie's been saying, listen, Marco Rubio is a robot. He has canned speeches. He has handlers that shadow him. He only calls on certain reporters because they have an understanding that the reporter will not ambush Marco Rubio with anything tough. And as long as that reporter stays in that friend zone, that reporter will get more and more exclusive access. And should Marco become the nominee, a reporter that has that access becomes very, very valuable. I mean, look at some of the reporters, whether it's Halperin or whoever, when they get to have that access and they get to follow around that candidate, they get to write books, they get to, you know, host TV shows. It's a big deal. So Chris Christie was the loudest. And it just shows you that Jeb Bush is just completely inept in life. Seriously. Because Jeb Bush was attacking Rubio before Chris Christie. But Jeb Bush could never, ever, he could never, ever do the job. He would attack Rubio, and Rubio would spin it around and basically shove it right back into Jeb's face. Made Jeb look horrible. So the knock is basically Rubio is a robot. He has canned answers. He has a staff protecting him. He has an establishment like Fox News, Megyn Kelly, SE Cup, Dana LaRoche, Greta Van Susteren, Sean Hannity. The list goes on and on and on and on. Roger Ailes, Rupert Murdoch. Everybody basically saying he's our guy. He's our guy. We're going to protect him. We're going to make sure he gets through this primary season. Sheldon Adelson. Sheldon Adelson. Remember, that was Newt Gingrich's sugar daddy. Sheldon Adelson came out and said, I support Rubio. Remember, Adelson just bought that big newspaper in Las Vegas. A couple weeks ago, it was official that Adelson bought that newspaper. And then a couple days ago, that newspaper came out and said, we endorse Marco Rubio. So Sheldon Adelson is throwing his money, his influence, his power behind Marco Rubio. So he's the guy. Okay? He is the guy. And remember, Adelson, Zinger, Crystal, all these guys haven't had a winner in years. They haven't backed a winner. Yeah, sure. Once Mitt Romney is the nominee, they get behind Mitt Romney. But they all had their own guys. Rather it was Newt Gingrich. Rather it was Huckabee, Santorum, whoever. They all had their own guys. They all sat there and went, this guy. He's going to get the nomination, and this guy is going to be the president. And he's my boy. He's going to owe me big time because I've given him $10, $20, $30 million. And every single one of these guys have had a guy, and that guy has crashed and burned. Every single guy. Sheldon crash and burn with Newt. And so far in this primary season, all of these players, the Adelsons, the Crystals, they've all kind of taken a back seat because Trump has basically created chaos. Because you got to remember, not just Trump attacking different candidates and calling people out and doing the things that he does and drawing the crowds, but all the other candidates have had to alter how they would run a campaign because of Trump. They've all had to alter how they would attack because of Trump. They've all had to alter their television appearances because of Trump. Remember, we talked about this weeks ago. Even Hillary Clinton is doing more press because of Trump. If it wasn't for Trump, you wouldn't see the elections the way they are. If it wasn't for Trump, you wouldn't see this process the way it is. You would not see this election cycle the way it is. We would not have the access. But Trump has basically put himself out there and said, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do interview, I'll do appearance. And by doing that, he doesn't have to lay out millions of dollars on advertising. And all these other candidates seen that. So when you hear the Rand Pauls and the Rubios and the Christies going, oh, well, the press is just playing into it. They're broadcasting Donald Trump. They're doing interviews with Donald Trump. And people had to say to them, listen, stupid. The only reason that's happening is because he's made himself available. If you made yourself available, you could go on Meet the Press. You could go on with Chuck Todd every week. You could go on with Megyn Kelly. You could go on with Sean Hannity. You could go on with Bill O'Reilly. You could go on with Greta. All you have to do is call their producers up, have your people call them up and say, hey, Governor Christie wants to be on Greta Van Susteren's show. And they would go, okay. And once these candidates figured that out, they went, oh, wow. So if we just make ourselves available, all of these shows will put us on. Okay. And lo and behold, you have everybody doing Jimmy Fallon, everybody doing Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel. Never in an election cycle have we had this many politicians, this many candidates appear on these shows. But everybody goes, oh my gosh, Trump did it, then I got to do it. Everybody's game has been changed because of Trump. Everybody's game has been changed. So the anointed one has been Marco Rubio. He's been protected. And we've been hearing this from Chris Christie. Jeb Bush tries to attack him. It doesn't work. Rand Paul tries it, doesn't work. Well, Chris Christie's been saying he's the bubble boy. He's the boy in the bubble. Bubble boy, bubble boy, bubble boy. Canned speeches. Handlers that protect him. Bubble boy, canned speeches. Repeats the same thing over and over. And lo and behold, Saturday night, Marco Rubio got beaten up to the point where I literally had to turn my head away. It was like a UFC fight where the person gets they get punched. Okay, it's like old UFC where they get punched, they collapse to the floor, and the guy stands on top of them and just keeps punching him in the face. And the guy's already knocked out, and he looks dead. And the other guy just keeps punching him in the face. And you just kind of turn your head away going, oh, my God, that's horrible. That's what happened to Marco Rubio. Chris Christie punched Marco Rubio repeatedly to the point where you turned away because it was so bad. Remember years ago when Rick Perry couldn't name the, three agencies or four agencies that he would cut for the commerce or energy, whatever the hell it was. He had the big thing, I'm going to cut this agency there. And he was asked, okay, well, what are those agencies? And Rick Perry goes, the energy and commerce and you're looking going, no way. You don't know what you're going to cut. You don't no way. And I think Rand Paul or Ron Paul chimes in with, agriculture or says something which wasn't correct. And Rick Perry goes, no, like you're trying to trick me. And the moderator goes, so you can't come up with. And Rick Perry goes, oops. And it was that moment where his campaign was done. Oops. It was that moment. It was the oops moment. And it got played on a regular basis. It was a 24-hour loop Literally, it was a 24-hour loop, 7 days a week. Oops. 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 24 hours a day. It was the oops moment. That's what happened to Marco Rubio. He had a oops moment. He had a oops moment. And it was huge. Marco Rubio would repeat the same response over and over and over again. People say Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing, but that's wrong. Barack Obama knows exactly what he's doing. And what he's doing is trying to fundamentally change this country. That was his line. That was his line. And when I'm president, that was his line. Okay? And he uses that line once. He says it once. And it's cool. Barack Obama is systematically trying to carry out an effort to change his country. And that's why this election is so important. We need to stop that from continuing. Barack Obama is fundamentally trying to... Awesome. Impactful. So he says it. And it was in response to a question from the moderator. So then it goes to Chris Christie. Where Chris Christie goes, that's a problem, Marco Rubio. He's a senator. Senators don't do anything. I'm a governor. I actually have to lead this and that. I can't just get up and say the same canned speech because Marco Rubio is, you know, this boy in a bubble. So then it goes back to Rubio and he goes, well, Chris, Barack Obama is systematically trying to carry out the... And he repeats himself, and you see him starting to get really flustered. He's starting to sweat, like bad. I called it the Nixon moment. When I was on Twitter, I go, it's the Nixon moment, like sweat, starting to drip off his brow. So he repeats himself, okay? He repeats himself again. And then Chris Christie says, see, there he goes, repeating himself, the same line. And after Christie says, there he goes, repeating himself, going by the script, the camera shifts to Marco Rubio, and Marco Rubio now covered in sweat. I mean, he literally looks like the soccer player, the little high school soccer boy that just lost because Barack Obama is systematically just, and so he repeats himself again. He repeats the same line after Chris Christie says, there you go, repeating yourself again. He repeats himself again. You literally collectively could hear the Republican establishment. Okay? You collectively could hear the Republican establishment let out a huge no. I mean, literally, a scream of no. Sheldon Adelson, that decrepit old crypt keeper from the old TV show Creep Show, is like no. I mean, it was just deafening. They watched as their great Cuban hope completely exploded on stage because after Christie calls him out for repeating himself, and then he repeats himself, and you hear the crowd kind of grumbling, and then Christie stops him, and then the moderator jumps in. Rubio, exasperated at that moment, basically looks around and goes, "What? No, but what I keep trying to tell everybody is Barack Obama knows exactly." And he says it one more time. He literally said the same line 4 or 5 times. I think it was 5. Some say 4, some say 5. I was laughing so hard, I might have missed the last one. And listen, we're not talking about a 3-hour debate, which the debates were almost 3 hours, okay? We're not talking about a 3-hour debate where you got 7, 8 people, and you got question for candidate 1, question for candidate 3, question for candidate 2, question for candidate 5, back to number 2. And throughout that 2.5, 3 hours, when a candidate talks and says something, he ends with like a catchphrase. But they're talking about an issue. So it's like, "Mr. Trump, what are you going to do about ISIS?" "Well, here's what we got to do about ISIS. We got to take their oil. We got to bomb their oil. We got to take their money. We got to burn their money. We have to attack them in the areas that they use to recruit and to build their army. We got to do it. When I'm president, that's what we'll do, and we'll make this country great again." Yay! Question, 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 question. "Mr. Trump, what are you going to do about the police and relations?" "Police are great. They're doing a great job. They're not being respected enough. We have to respect them more. When I'm president, I'm going to make sure I bring that respect back to the police department and make this country great again." Yeah, see, you can have a catchphrase. There's nothing wrong with the catchphrase. But it's like your end. It's like the wrestler, The Rock. "Do you smell blah, 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 what The Rock is cooking?" It's a catchphrase. You talk, blah, 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 and you end with the catchphrase. That's cool. You stay on point, stay on message. But, when you're answering a question or you're engaged in a verbal battle with another candidate, the catchphrase is not your response. So the catchphrase of, "So Mr. Rubio or Senator Rubio, you voted for the Gang of Eight bill." Well, let me tell you something. If you don't think Barack Obama knows what he's doing, he sure the hell knows what he does. He is systematically, "Okay, but that had nothing to do with the question." "What was the question again?" "The Gang of Eight bill." Well, let me tell you something. Barack Obama, that's what he was doing. He wouldn't answer the question. When he got called out on the fact that he was repeating himself, he repeated himself. He just kept going back to a script that said, "If you get in trouble, this is what you say. If you get in trouble in this aspect, this is what you say." So he kept going back to that line. So if he got in trouble, but the handlers, the donors, Fox News, everybody was going, "Oh my God, he's so stupid. He's not audibling. He doesn't understand. He's sticking to the script too much. He needs to be able to audible. He needs to be able to check out. He needs to be able to say, oh man, okay, so he's hitting me here. I got to go to this one. I got to go to that one." Horrible. I mean, horrible. And it was funny because I actually watched, and like I said, it's obvious that Fox and all of the pundits have been told, this is who we have to support. This is who we need to be the nominee. This is who we have to go with. Because no sooner than the debate was done, the Fox panel, led by David Gregory, remember he got fired from Meet the Press on MSNBC? David Gregory, and it's funny because what David Gregory said as far as spin is what Rubio is trying to spin. So Gregory goes, well, so goes to the debate, the Brit, not Brit Hume. Brit Hume was there, but whatever the kid, the chubby kid that's was the moderator of, I can't remember his name. Anyway, so he goes to the little round table and says, so the most telling moment was Marco Rubio repeating the same line as Chris Christie was attacking him. And David Gregory goes, I don't think that was that big of a deal. You got to understand what he was doing was not engaging with Chris Christie. And he was staying on message, staying on point. That's what he was doing. So it wasn't that he was repeating himself. He knew what he was doing. But it was almost like it was going over people's heads. Because he's acting as if he's already in a general election. Or there's one or two people up there. But there's seven or eight people up there. And he has to win the nomination before he could even think about crafting this message and staying on point and focusing on Barack Obama. So I think that got lost. And I think people got lost with that. But I think it was a strategic move with what he did. And I'm like, what? I mean, that was David Gregory's observation. And the woman that was sitting next to him, I can't remember her name. She's kind of got this deep voice. And she basically went, you're joking, right? You're absolutely joking, right? That wasn't a systematic plan. He freaked. He was getting attacked. He didn't know how to handle it. He started to repeat himself. Even when Chris Christie said, you're repeating yourself, he continued to repeat himself. He's weak. A deer in headlights. He choked. She was great. And you could just see David Gregory with this smile on his face like, hey, I'm just doing the talking points at Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch. I'm just doing what I've been told. Remember, Rubio's got the staff. Whose dad works here. I mean, remember, Rubio has a person on his team. He's got a girl on his team, a woman on his team whose father is an executive at Fox. This woman worked with Dana Perino, Fox. So Rubio's got a whole little crew of people that work for him that are part of Fox. Frank Luntz, you know, the guy that does the focus groups. So after the debates, he goes, oh, so-and-so won. They didn't seem to have a focus group after this debate because it wasn't part of Fox. He's paid by Fox. Marco Rubio has paid him hundreds of thousands of dollars in the past to help promote books and things of that nature when Rubio was in Florida. So Rubio is juiced into the Fox network. And watching them try to spin and put some type of lipstick and makeup on this disgusting, vile, dying pig to prop it up. It was pathetic. I mean, literally, you guys, that was the biggest moment. That was the biggest moment And rather it's Fox News, rather it's Dana Perino, or whoever. I haven't even heard any of the other radio shows today. But if these people try to spin and tell you, oh, he was just trying to stay on message, you all just didn't get that, tell them they are completely and utterly full of crap. He choked. Chris Christie got in his face and he choked. Choked. He's exactly what everybody said he was. Inexperienced, manufactured, establishment choice. The manufactured establishment's choice. He's like the heavyweight champion that gets the belt because it was vacant. He's the champion that gets the belt because it's vacant, and him and another guy fight for it. And the guy that he's fighting is like 90th ranked. He beats the guy easily, and now he's the world champion. And the handlers and managers have him defend his belt against weak, pathetic boxers. He's the paper champion. That's what Rubio is. He's the paper candidate. He is the paper candidate. And that was only an attack from Christie. And that was an attack of basically being a robot, having talking points, repeating canned speeches. There's so much more he can be attacked about, and he wasn't. It's almost everybody let him off the hook, or at least didn't pile up on him because they wanted that moment to resonate. Because the attack was so good, why take other shots that could actually either backfire or give Rubio a chance to counterpunch? Why do that? Christie knocked him out. Christie literally laid him out, and he's done. So why keep it going? Why have a shot where he could drag himself back up? No. But that was the biggest takeaway. One of the other takeaways was when Trump was getting booed by the audience. Not all the audience, but a section of the audience. And Trump basically attacked them. Said, listen, you're basically booing me because you're a bunch of donors. You're a bunch of Bush donors. That's why. You're a bunch of donors. And the fact that you don't give me money makes you upset. Because then I don't owe you nothing. And they booed even louder. And that's the truth, and everybody knows it. It was funny, you know, Katie Turr from MSNBC, because they despise Trump. Especially Katie Turr, because Trump calls her out all the time. She really quick tweeted, there's only 75 people that are in the audience that are donors. There are only 75. But Katie Turr, somehow she knows exactly how many donors are in the audience. Yeah. Katie Turr. This is the woman that got her start at MSNBC, that got to the big leagues because she was dating Keith Olbermann. Exactly. Exactly. End of story. Listen, everybody knows. Everybody knows. It is impossible to get tickets to those events. The only people that get tickets for those events are donors. End of story. They're not open to the public. You have to be a donor. Trump even said it. They were allotted a certain amount of tickets. That's it. Certain amount of tickets. Because different bulks, different, you know, 100 here, 200 here, 50 here, had to get. I said that a week and a half ago about the Iowa debate. When you hear Ted Cruz and Rubio say, you know, Trump should be here. Let the voters see him. The Iowa voters want it. The Iowa voters weren't there. Mom, pop, farmer. They weren't there. Average folk in Iowa didn't get up in the morning and go, you know what? You couldn't. You couldn't get tickets. Getting tickets for those debates are actually harder than getting tickets for the Super Bowl. As of yesterday, the morning of the Super Bowl, there were still tickets available. If I had $4,000, I could have went to the Super Bowl. If I had $4,000, I could have got tickets. Those debates, no. There's no tickets for sale. You have to be juiced in. You have to be a donor. You have to be somebody that kicks money down. You have to be somebody that's part of that system. That's the same thing in New Hampshire. That audience was not filled with your average folk that got up and got their ticket. So that was a huge spot in that debate. When Trump said, listen, you're booing because you're donors. End of story. And they got mad at him because Bush started going after Trump on eminent domain. Telling Trump that he tried to take an old lady's house. Tried to steal her house. Which wasn't true. And as Bush was interrupting Trump, who was trying to defend himself, he told Bush, shh, quiet. Bush was quiet. And that's a moment where the Bush donor class started booing. And it's funny because now we're finding out that Bush himself, or I should say the Bush family, used eminent domain to build the Texas Rangers baseball stadium. And you heard people go, yeah, but that wasn't Jeb. Listen, it's the Bush family. There is no Jeb without George. Junior and senior. There is no Jeb. There is no George, junior and senior, without Prescott. Who made his money off the Nazis. Prescott Bush profited off of doing business with the Nazis. And it wasn't, oh, I didn't know this business was connected with the Nazis. I didn't know. Prescott Bush knew exactly what businesses were propping up the Nazi regime. The same Nazi regime that burned to crisp, millions and millions of Jews. Nobody ever brings that up. When anybody attacks the Bushes, nobody ever brings up Prescott Bush's history with Nazis. I mean, there wouldn't be a Bush family without Prescott and his dealings with Nazis. Somehow that gets swept under the rug. It's amazing. I don't know why, but it does. And it shouldn't. Should not get swept under the rug. I do not know why. I do not know why. Why does it get swept under the rug? So when Trump tells Jeb to be quiet in the eminent domain issue, the crowd boos. Trump says, listen, we need eminent domain. How do you think roads, bridges? How do you think that Keystone Pipeline that everybody wants to build? How do you think that would get built if there was no eminent domain? And it's funny watching some of the people on stage, I guess you could say Bush, trying to talk about it being a government issue. And what Trump did was for limousines, which again wasn't the truth. When Jeb Bush says, oh, you just wanted to park your limousines, again, that wasn't the truth. The truth being parking lot. He's talking about a construction that would be part of casinos. You know, it's nuts. And at the end of the day, the price that Trump was going to pay for the property was something like 50 to 100 times more than what the property was worth. And when the fight took place and eventually Trump walked away from the property, the family eventually sold the property at a much less value than what Trump was actually going to pay for it. And the Keystone Pipeline is not a government project. It's a Canadian project. And the project from this Canadian company is not state-owned. It's a private company. So this whole eminent domain battle took place, because you got to remember something. Conservatives, or as they like to call themselves, true conservatives, don't believe in eminent domain. And if you believe in eminent domain, then you're not a true conservative. There's a constant battle that always takes place of what's a true conservative. Mark Levin created this conservatism based off of the Constitution. So everything has to be taken from the Constitution and constructed with how you live your life. And if you're not following the Constitution to the T, then you're not a conservative. So if you say, well, you should be able to scream fire in a crowded restaurant. You should be able to use speech in any way you want, wherever you want, You should be able to create media however you want, wherever you want. There should be no limitations. Same for the press. Because we have free speech. Then if you look at the Constitution and exactly what it says, there is no, well, you can't say this because it could cause a riot, and you can't say this because it would hurt someone's feelings. So you have to be right down to the T when it comes to the Constitution. And if you're not, you're not a conservative. End of story. And eminent domain is one of those things that if you are in favor of it, or I should say not in favor of it, if you don't have a problem with it being used in certain circumstances, then you're not a conservative. And I got to tell you the truth, my friends. I think the Republican voter that bases who he or she is going to vote for off of eminent domain is about 1%. I think eminent domain is an issue that the average voter doesn't give two F's about. Look at the electorate and you go, oh, 61 million for Mitt Romney, 67 million for Barack Hussein Obama. I don't think the 61 million that are part of the Republican Party that voted for Mitt Romney give two F's about eminent domain. I think the people that care about eminent domain are the people that took over the wildlife refuge in Oregon. I think those are the people that care about eminent domain. I think Cliven Bundy and his cattle grazing on federal lands, I think those are the people that care about eminent domain. And I think that's less of 1%. I think us Republicans in California, us Republicans in Texas, us Republicans in New York, us Republicans in Florida have no idea what it's like or care about taking over a wildlife refuge in the middle of bum F Egypt in Oregon. It just doesn't happen. And Trump trumped the Bush debate with, I'm talking. And then screaming, telling the audience they're a bunch of shills. They're part of the donor class. Bunch of donor classers. So that was a big moment. I mean, Trump did really, you know, I watch these things and I get so nervous. I do. I get so nervous. I sit there and I go, man, if he looks bad or he does something bad, done, it's gonna doom him. It's gonna doom him. And he comes through with flying colors. Comes through with flying colors. And then of course you had the intro. You had Ben Carson. Man, it's funny because Ben is not only asleep when he's on the stage behind the podium, okay? He's also asleep backstage. He's also asleep backstage, and he's asleep when the stage director tells Ben Carson to go on. Literally, the opening of the debate, where they're calling out the candidates, where they're saying, and George Bush, and Chris Christie, and they're calling them to come out. They call Ben Carson out, but Ben Carson doesn't exit. Ben Carson waits. And you see the stagehand poke his head, the stage director poke his head through the curtain. He's got the headset on, and he's looking at Ben Carson, and he gives him the go, go. And Ben Carson kind of looks at him with his sleepy eyes, gives him the F you. He'll go when he's ready. No white man is going to tell me to go. And Ben Carson just sits there. Or just stands there. And candidate after candidate are walking by him. And he's just standing there. Hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. He just standing there. Just watching him stand there. Clueless. What he did. That's what he did. And still, you know, Ben Carson, maybe he's too smart. I mean, he's not dumb. I mean, the guy's a brain surgeon. So it's wrong to say that he's dumb. But, you know, maybe he's just so nuanced with the things that he says. Maybe he's just so nuanced with the things that he says that the average person like me, I'm average. I'm average intelligence. Maybe the average person like me, in his speeches, in his answers, because he'll start talking, and I literally just zone out. It's not a zone out of, oh, here's, you know, Bernie Sanders droning on about the billionaires and the millionaires. So you just kind of go, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I know. They get the breaks. Everybody else does it. Okay, and you just kind of zone out. But Ben Carson, he starts talking, and it's like you're in 11th grade, but you're in a third year, third semester college course of physics or just something that is just way above your head. And you just, as soon as the first word is spoken, you're just like, what? That's what listening to Ben Carson is like. I just go, what? What did he just say? So I know he's not stupid. As a brain surgeon. But his nuance is just, I just don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't know. It's tough. So Ben had his moments of confusion. You got Ben. You got Kasich, which I like Kasich. I told you guys. First is Trump, and second and third, you could shuffle up with Christie and Kasich, but Christie has to lose weight. With that being said, I like Kasich. He's very wishy-washy. That's the only thing. He's very wishy-washy. He's very wishy-washy. And I could see him getting kind of pummeled, if you could say that. I could see him getting pummeled as the president with Republicans saying, you got to do this, you got to do that, this is what you got to do, blah, 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 blah. And I could see him going with it. He doesn't seem strong. I would say he's as close to being a Democrat as you could possibly get without calling yourself a Democrat. If there was another party that was called Republican Light, Kasich would be the boss. He would be the man of a Republican Light. He's very, very happy. And I get what he's trying to do. And I get it. Because you have Trump who's saying, we got to make the country great again. We don't win at our, military. We don't win for, healthcare. We don't win for so forth and so on. We don't win. We have to make our country great. So there's that message. Ted Cruz, his message, our country is not good, and it's not just Democrats, but it's Republicans because no one sticks to the Constitution. Kasich has this message of, hey, everything's all right. Everything could be better. But everything's not bad. Look at my state. It's not bad. Look at other states where Republicans are governors. It's not bad there. All over the country is not bad. And if I'm elected president, I can make the states that are experiencing some unpleasantries, I can make them good, and I can make them happy. So he's giving this positive, inspirational spin. He's trying to draw that contrast. He's trying to draw that contrast. He's trying to draw that voter who says, I'm not angry. I don't want to build a wall. I want someone to fix immigration, but I don't require a wall. I don't require E-Verify. I don't require some of these things. I used to be a Democrat, and now I'm a Republican. Or I'm an independent who would vote Democrat, but I could get pulled back to the Republican side. I want somebody, and this is a George Bush-ism, I want someone that's compassionate. I want a compassionate conservative. And that's what Kasich is trying to do. I don't necessarily agree with a lot of his things, but I appreciate his angle. And like I said, out of all the guys, Trump is one, and Kasich and Christie are 2 and 3. Christie could be 2 if he would lose about 100 pounds. Jeb Bush is horrible. He's dead Bush walking. They say he's in a close race for second in New Hampshire. If Jeb Bush finishes 2 or 3 in New Hampshire, We're going to have him for another few weeks. Ugh. Horrible. Horrible. Ted Cruz, he didn't hurt himself, but he didn't necessarily help himself. He was Ted Cruz. Again, Ted Cruz is just a more polished, a lot more educated, a lot smarter, a lot more cunning. Holy roller. And he showcased that again. But that's all he is. He's never going to appeal. He's never going to appeal to middle-of-the-road Republican voters. Never. If you're not a holy roller, and all my religious fans, my religious friends, my religious listeners, I don't say that as disrespect. Don't take it as disrespect. But if you're not somebody that wakes up and prays, goes to sleep and prays, and lives your life based on God's words first, Ted Cruz doesn't appeal to you. Ted Cruz doesn't appeal to you. Somebody that talks very preachy, and that's how Ted Cruz talks. That's how Ted Cruz talks. And it's, you know, and it's funny to me because whenever the Democrats would bust out a preachy candidate, i.e. Jesse Jackson, i.e. Reverend Al, no evangelicals come to that side. No evangelicals. Now, I don't know if it's a black thing. I don't know if it's a baggage thing. But the Republican holy rollers don't go for the Democrat holy rollers. Don't know if it's the abortion. I don't know. So it's definitely not 100% Jesus. But where I'm going with it, the Republicans criticize the Sharptons or the Jacksons. They actually criticize the fact that they are preachers. And yet Ted Cruz is the exact same thing. He really is. Ted Cruz is the exact same thing. He didn't hurt himself. He didn't necessarily do enough to convert people to not holy rollers into giving a holy roller a shot. And Chris Christie, I don't know if Chris Christie did enough to put himself number two, but he did enough to knock Marco Rubio. He did enough to knock Marco Rubio out of second spot. And he did enough to put himself in a position to possibly have a job. Republican wins. He possibly has put himself in position to have a job in that next administration. By doing what he did to Rubio, he definitely, not what you're saying, but if Rubio is part of the establishment and Chris, If Rubio's out, the establishment will just lick their wounds and say, fine, we'll get behind whoever is going to be the nominee. And let's just say, for the sake of argument, Bush somehow sticks in there, and Kasich somehow sticks in there. And at the end of the day, Trump falls under a gas truck, dies, and everybody has to choose between Kasich, Bush, Cruz, or Christie. They're going to go with Kasich. Ultimately, they're going to go with the governor of Ohio. And that was all set up because Christie took out Rubio. So, yeah, this could be what? The attorney general? He talks about his experience in being a prosecutor during 9/11. The guy's a lawyer. I could see him being the attorney general of the United States of America. He's not going to be the governor much longer of New Jersey. He's not going to win the nomination. Rubio doesn't finish second. Rubio doesn't finish third. And you have a Kasich, Bush, Cruz. If Bush finishes higher than Rubio, why the hell would anybody in the establishment keep getting behind Rubio? If Bush finishes better than Rubio, why wouldn't the establishment get behind Bush? Considering he still has, I don't know, $80 or $90 million left in his super PAC. The narrative changed. Tomorrow we're going to know again what has changed. Iowa changed things. The debate changed things. Tomorrow we're going to see what it all means. We're going to see what this debate meant. We're going to see what Iowa meant as pertaining to New Hampshire. Now tomorrow it all changes. If Trump wins, he'd go one. Kasich or Bush go two. Go three. Ted Cruz four. Rubio five. It's over. I mean, I'm no high-wheeling, high-dealing pundit, but if Rubio drops from possibly two to five, it's over. It's over. The establishment let out their scream. Okay? When they let that scream out, when Rubio can repeat over and over and over and over, it will continue. If Rubio goes from two, which everybody was predicting before the debate, to four or five, it's done. All that support's gone, and whoever finishes two is getting that support. Whoever finishes 2 or 3 is getting that support. Everything changes again. Everything changes again. And we'll be talking about this for another 2-3 weeks leading up to South Carolina. And what is it all going to mean? Where do we go from here? What's going to happen? Who's going to finish first? Who's going to finish second? So we'll see.